Good morning, everyone. It is midnight, and that means it's time for the Banana Republic. I'm glad you're here with me. I hope you will stay for the full hour. And I have quite a lot in store today. Lots of chat, I think, is the way it's going to go. And I do have songs, and I do have stories from Paul, and I think from Scott, and I think little extracts from other places. So I'm looking forward to sharing those with you. What else can I tell you? Well, I can tell you this. Stoke Source mentioned doing a radio station, and I think that's a good idea. So we have been chatting about that, and thanks, bring that in. Awesome. And we have been chatting about doing one, yeah, on the Sunshine Coast with music from the coast. And what I think and is that it would be a better idea to use what we've already got, a bit like Unix does, and you just pipe one thing into another. So I thought perhaps taking a block of time at, say, is it 600 hours or is it, no, it's 1800, maybe it's 2000 hours was the old time, which correlates to 6 o'clock in Australia, at least where we live in Australia, which is the Sunshine Coast. And if it does line up with, say, 6 o'clock to seven, a full hour, and then doing six or seven shows, and then repeating the show in the second hour, so from 6 o'clock our time to 7 o'clock, it's all fresh content, and then it repeats in the second hour. Yeah, anyway, that'll take it up to 8 o'clock, and it'll fill that block of time for the whole week, maybe. And I just wondered what that would look like, even if it was just done for a few weeks, to see what the format does and how it rolls. Yeah, that's my thought. Let's think about other things then. I cycled into work again today, but as I drove past one of the houses on my street, on a block of land about an acre, I think it's an acre big, they were demolishing a perfectly good brick home. And I stopped and asked them if they would let me have their wood, which looked, from where I was standing, like hardwood. And that would be perfect for my next cabin. I think I've mentioned my cabin before, and that I've been building a cabin, which is almost finished. So it's a little small, tiny house. And it's not that tiny, actually. It's 3.5 meters by 3 meters. And it's about nearly 4 meters tall. So I made the roof as high as I could and put a picture up on Pixel Fed. Based on helping Stoke Source where I can without getting in the way, prepare for the music festival. And Stoke Source very cleverly put me onto the, whatever you call it, when you do a show, you say what you need, like mics and things, and who will be there and who will be mixing and whatnot. And so he put me down as being in charge of the merch. So selling the swag, the t-shirts and the pin-ups and the stickers, etc. Okay, it's time for some German New Wave from DOF. So that's a big D with a little O and two little things on top of the O. I very much like this next song because it tells a story about redemption and love overcoming hatred. From 1983, is called Kodo. And Kodo is short for Kosmische Dom, which translates as Cosmic Fool. The song is a bizarre science-fi pop confection. Became one of the biggest hits of 1983, reaching number one in Germany, Austria, Belgium, and the Netherlands. The accompanying album was also successful, selling over 500,000 copies, pretty amazing for a comedy LP, featuring spoken word skits in Viennese dialect. However, the Hump Sisters soon left the project to record as a duo. So I've got some more songs from Hump and Hump later. I have to admit that I discovered this song on Oberosa's show, and so thank you for playing that last week, Oberosa. Before I start, though, I want to tell you a little bit about the lyrics. And they've been translated from German, I think. For 2,000 years, the earth has lived without love. The Lord of Hatred rules. Ugly, I'm so ugly, so hideously ugly. I am hate. Hate, ugly hatred, I can't stop, I am hate. And then there's this other verse which goes, attention, attention. Unknown flying objects approaching the planet. Identify unknown flying object. And the spaceship replies back, Coda the third from the center of the stars. I am the third from the left. Unknown flying object identifies as Coda. And then the chorus, and I jet, jet, jet at full speed, and bring my love with me riding across the sky, because love, love, love is a lot of fun. Much more fun than anything else. We do not need any love on this planet, replies the villain. Turn around, Coda, or you will be destroyed. Coda, destroy love. Target address, Gamma Delta 731 in space. Coda from afar, the shining stars, I love jetting through space. And then the chorus, again. The object is breaking through the hate screen. Angry, I'm so angry, everything is anger, I am hate. Powerful infinity, powerful and mean. Such is my hatred. And then the chorus. So as I said, that tells the story of redemption. The love doesn't get to Earth and then it does. And I think that's a nice song. Very nice song indeed. So here we go, let's listen to it.
Seit 2000 Jahren lebt die Erde ohne Liebe. Es regiert der Herr des Hasses. Hässlich. Ich bin so hässlich, so grässlich hässlich. Ich bin der Hass. Hassen, ganz hässlich hassen. Ich kann's nicht lassen. Ich bin der Hass.
Attention, attention, unknown flying object approaching the planet.
Der Dritte von links.
Unknown flying object.
sind, alles zersetzend. Ich bin der Hass.
Und ich düse, 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 düse im Sauseschritt und bring die Liebe mit von meinem Himmelsritt. Denn die Liebe, 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 die macht viel Spaß. Viel mehr Spaß als irgendwas. Und ich düse, 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 düse im Sauseschritt und bring die Liebe mit von meinem Himmelsritt. Denn die Liebe, 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 die macht viel Spaß. Viel mehr Spaß als irgendwas. Und ich düse, 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 düse im Sauseschritt und bring die Liebe mit von meinem Himmelsritt. Denn die Liebe, 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 die macht viel Spaß. Viel mehr Spaß als irgendwas.
This next song also has that floaty, dreamy feeling. I have no idea how to say it, but it's something like Greschlin Einschlaf by Hump and Hump again. Straight ahead, a story from Paul. We all remember Paul. He's got some interesting tales, and here's another one.
My mother was, I think, 14 at the outbreak of World War II and was living in Manchester, which did come in for some fairly heavy bombing, being an industrial area and stuff. And so there was a routine, you know. My mum lived with her grandma because her father was an invalid from the First World War, and he had to go away and work, and her mother had died when she was very, very young. I think before she was two, she died of tuberculosis. And so mum always used to tell me the story, you know, the bombers, the German bombers would come over and start pounding Manchester, where they had a sweet shop. They used to sell chocolates and stuff. And my mum had an enduring legacy of a love of chocolate her entire life. Anyway, as the bombers came over, Grandma would get Mum out of bed and rush her to the Anderson shelter, which was in the garden, which was often flooded. These Anderson shelters were basically just corrugated iron that was buried. You buried it in your garden, and it wouldn't stand a direct hit. But you know, if there was shrapnel and stuff like that from the bombing, you'd be pretty safe. And they were a lot safer than the Morrison shelters, which was basically a steel cage you had underneath your stairs, and like, which was fine if you didn't mind being buried alive. Anyway, Mum said she remembers vividly running out to the Anderson shelter and with the searchlights going up, with Grandma swearing, holding the two most precious things to her in the entire world, her tea caddy and her whalebone corsets, and blow if bloody Hitler was going to get them. True story.
Let's play another song and then come back to a story from Paul. Another story.
Thank you.
there was no messing around. But she also had a soft heart as well, even though she was quite strict. At the age of 14, at the outbreak of war, Mum decided that she wanted to be a nurse. And being only 14, she had to get permission from her grandma, who was her, basically, her, she was a ward of her grandma because her father was away. And so she had to have permission, and they went and saw the head nurse, the matron, at the Great Northern Hospital in Liverpool, where she would do her training. And she was told, look, you're very young. Are you sure you're not going to mind being away from your family? And her grandmother said, nope, you'll have no problem with this one at all. she'll be fine. Mum was fiercely independent, and she never needed anybody, ever, in her entire life. And she started her training at 14. At 19, she was a ward sister already. She was one of the youngest ever ward sisters. She pioneered hospital radio. That was something that my mother pioneered, which was a big thing in the 50s and 60s. You know, you had a radio station within the hospital that put music through for people who were sick in bed. And I think she got her NHS, because everything went NHS in 1947. She got her NHS registration. And in those days, nursing was a vocation. It was like kind of becoming a nun. It's something you did. You didn't get married. You did nursing. And she, so she had no intention of marrying. And then in her 40s, she met my dad and gave up nursing, which is absolutely a miracle, you know. And then for the 12 years that they were married, he sadly died at the end of 12 years of leukemia. In fact, the scary thing is that Mum, being a nurse, when he showed her this rash that he got, she knew exactly what it was and knew that he was doomed. But then, so she had a break of about 12, 13 years. And I can remember, as a six-year-old, walking around Plimpton, you know, because we had to walk very slow up hills because she only had one lung, because she had to have most of the other lung removed due to TB in the 1950s. And she was a very good tennis player. She was actually of Wimbledon standard. She was professionally trained. So we were walking to hospitals, and she finally found this geriatric hospital in Plimpton Hospital. And they had no position for a sister. So she started again after all those years as a staff nurse, and then worked her way up to running the hospital, which took about 10 years. So she went from, she was a sister within a couple of years of being there. And in the end, she ran the hospital right up until her retirement. So.
You have some interesting stories.
Yeah. I hope so. She is a lovely woman, my mother. We would spend our weekends by getting in the car and just going up on Dartmoor, walking on the moors, or she would sit in a chair and just soak up the sun, and I'll fly a kite or something. It's funny, you know, before I told you about this, I was thinking of that very thing. We used to go to a little restaurant in Yelverton called the Leg of Mutton. And we used to have, lemon meringue. And the lemon meringues would be, you'd have like that much lemon, like over 2 inches thick. And then the meringue on top would be like this. And it was soft. It was crispy and soft. And honestly, it would be about 12 inches high. It's absolutely fantastic. She cried the day they shut that cafe, that restaurant. And we used to go to Are you still taking me? We used to go across the Tamar Bridge every once in a while into Cornwall, and we went to a little pub called the Weary Friar, and we used to always have chicken in the basket. You get like a quarter of a roast chicken and chips and salad and stuff. Or she'd take me to the Lord Louis pub in Plympton. I always used to have the scampi there, scampi. And on my birthday, no matter how old I was, from the age of 10 onwards, I was allowed a pint of beer in the pub for my really? Birthday. Yeah, so she'd always buy me a pint of beer or a pint of cider was my favourite. She'd buy me a pint of cider.
That's quite amazing.
And if we didn't go out, she used to get a big bottle of Co-op sparkling cider, and I'd have a few glasses of that. So she had a very liberal kind of attitude towards alcohol. She used to drink Guinness and brandy and cognac. If she ever felt ill, she'd go to bed with a hot glass of milk and a glass of cognac. I remember being really ill, very ill as a child, and her getting out a bottle of water that she'd found in Lourdes, which is where all the miracles take place because of Saint Bernadette and stuff, and drinking this 40-year-old bottle of Lourdes water that tasted like drinking cow's piss. It was absolutely horrible, and I didn't get any better. It would probably be more productive to have prayed for me rather than force that water down.
Oh, Paul.
But my mum and dad were Catholic royalty. She was a very, very committed Catholic. When I say that, I mean, like, she went to Mass every day. Every day. There's always an early morning Mass at the church when she wasn't working. Yeah. She went to Stations of the Cross on Friday in benediction. She went to confessions on Saturday. I went to catechism, you know, everything. I was an altar boy, the full works, everything. And my father researched books for Cardinal Hume.
Really?
Who was a really nice guy. He was a top guy, really. As Cardinal Hume would always describe himself, although he was a cardinal, really at heart he was a monk and wanted to pray and research and things like that. And he researched significant Catholic Christians and what they had done. And he wrote a book called Death Be Not Proud, which is all about one of the young founding members of the Young Christian Workers Movement before the Second World War, who was killed, I believe, in Auschwitz. My father, Tony, did all the research for that book.
Really?
So Cardinal Hume would come to our house regularly. Yeah, this cardinal from Rome would come to our little semi-detached house in Plympton.
That's insane.
And when I was about 7, he took me on pilgrimage.
Really?
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
I went to Aylesford. I went to Aylesford with my dad, actually. That's Aylesford Priory I went to. That was, Mum had some kind of connection with the Carmelite order, so that's why I went to Aylesford. I didn't mean Aylesford. I'm just trying to think of the name. Oh, they call it Launceston here, but the Aussies always pronounce it wrong. It's not Launceston. It's Launceston. That's how you pronounce it in England. And Launceston is a small village up in northeast Devon, not far from Tavistock, where St. Cuthbert Mayne was martyred for his faith, was hung, drawn and quartered.
Oh, my goodness.
And I went there with Cardinal Hume.
Really?
Yeah. And went on pilgrimage to Launceston. And I think he said Mass there, if I remember rightly. There were a lot of people who went. We all went in coaches.
And, oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So your dad, was he a religious man?
My dad was a very... How would I describe my dad? He was a very committed Christian. Like in this book that I'm doing at the moment, you always get to do a dedication at the beginning of a book if you do a book. So I'm illustrating this book. And I've put to my father, Tony O'Sullivan, a man before his time who was taken, a man ahead of his time who was taken before his time. He had very, very radical ideas. He was a proponent of Vatican II, which was a lot more liberal Catholicism. And he was in the Young Christian Workers Movement as well. And one of the things that he did was he trained to be a social worker. He, in fact, actually, he did try getting into the priesthood, but they said, look, you're not really built for this, something else. And he went to Plato College, Oxford, and learned to be a civil servant, became a social worker. And his specific job was down on Newnham Industrial Estate, which was about a mile's walk from our house. And his job was the rehabilitation of offenders. So they would come out of Dartmoor Prison up on the moor. So you're talking category A's and B's here. They were
really serious guys.
Yeah, they were serious guys. And they would be taught engineering, fitter turnering, and then once they'd done their apprenticeship at Newnham, they would probably go and work in the docks, you know, because Devonport at that stage was still building docks, well, still building ships. And also, it's a big naval port, so ships were constantly being serviced there and things. So he had an office, and his job was to counsel all the guys who worked there and deal with any problems that they had.
So what are you illustrating at the moment?
I'm illustrating a book for Paul Collins, Ford Street Publishing, called Tani's World, which is about a girl who is depressed, and I portrayed her as being in a bubble. And this bubble distorts everything that she sees. So, you know, a dust cart, a refuge cart, looks like a monster. And how she is constantly trapped in this bubble until she finds this stray dog, which is also trapped in a bubble. And at that point, they reach out to each other and the bubbles burst. And it's through her interaction with the dog that she comes to getting back out in the real world.
Oh, my goodness. That's a nice story.
Well, that's what's known as third narrative. In picture books, you have three narratives. You have the written narrative, the visual narrative, and the narrative that the child sees in their mind when they combine the words and images. So, for instance, to add good narrative, I often ask the kids when I teach at the school here, okay, the words in the book say, the cat sat on the mat. What would you draw? And 99.9% of the kids say, we would draw a cat sat on a mat. But in doing so, you are following the words and you're not adding to the narrative. But if you drew a chrome metal lion, half robot, half creature, flying on a magic carpet through outer space with comets flying past, you've added to the narrative, but you've still got a cat on a mat. So that's the real trick of doing picture books, is figuring out how to put extra narrative in. Because really, there should be two stories in tandem, side by side. The stories in the picture should tell a different story to the ones in the written word, but they should all complement each other.
Thank you, Paul.
No worries.
Okay, another German song ahead. This is also by Hump and Hump, and let's hear what it has to say.
I do anyhow. I do.
Next, a South African comedian I enjoy listening to. His name is Kevin Fraser.
Zanzibar Shore. Guys, this is literally why I can't do Apple anymore, hey? Like, flipping useless, I tell you. Hey, Siri, when is the latest iPhone 13 coming out?
Apple.com should be able to answer that question and more.
No. You should be able to answer that question because you are like the heart of Apple, so to speak. You're like the voice and you literally can't even answer this question. Hey Siri, have you always been this useless?
That's not nice.
Hey Siri, what do you think of COVID-19?
I just want my human friends to be safe. Keep looking out for each other and following the guidelines for where you live.
That's just not even cool. That was a joke, and she came up with a full paragraph on this shit, but she can't tell me when the iPhone 13's coming out. Okay.
Well, as it happened, it came out today or yesterday, I think.
We gotta love and sing, we got to feed it right. Pauses in the night.
Next up, XTC. I hope you enjoyed this song. It's called Generals and Majors. I'm not sure what I like about this song. It's just a nice, cruisy song. All right, here we go.
Victorious, oh, generals and majors always.
Well, friends and citizens, thank you for joining me today, this morning. I hope you've enjoyed the show. That is, I'm afraid, all we have time for. Please join me next week, and I look forward to presenting you with another edition of music. Take care from the Banana Republic. Bye.